And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. Coming up on this show, a hat-trick of FA Cup wins for City's Slickers as Manchester City beat Everton at Wembley.
Rising City star Jess Park joins us to talk about that win and life in the blue half of Manchester.
And the WSL returns this weekend. We give you the lowdown on the matches to watch out for.
Welcome along. I'm Kate Borsay.
And I'm Lindsay Hooper. And this week we're also joined by BBC journalist and friend of the show, Joe Curry. Joe, you were pitch side for the FA Cup final at Wembley. Best seat in the house. There weren't many seats available. No fans.
Loads of seats available.
Well, loads of seats available. No, none of them being taken up. How was it for you?
Two words, loved it. Yes, it was lacking fans and maybe there was, you know, you missed that buzz in the stadium. Last year we had 45,000 fans in there. So a slight lack of a buzz, but to be fair, the match was brilliant, wasn't it? And as you said, I had the best seat in the house, so really can't complain.
We've been to so many FA Cup finals now, Linz, and I was so gutted not to be there. And also for this game, you know, this is the big event, isn't it, for women's football. And there's always a race on to see if they can sell more tickets than the year before. So I was really disappointed not to have fans there. Of course, it's just one of those things. And I guess even more so because we didn't get to witness that live.
No, but what we did see was huge audience figures on the BBC, Joe. 1.6 million tuned in to watch. And I guess that there's a memo being sent round to all staff that that's a big thumbs up.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of our kind of flagship domestic football games that we have on the BBC. It's the biggest event of the women's domestic calendar. And I'm so pleased, obviously, that it's a BBC event. But yeah, great viewing figures. It just shows when you put it on the big channels, people want to watch it.
They certainly do. So being there, I mean, and up close to the action, tell us a little bit about what it was like being able to watch that level of football. Because I think more than anything else, it was a great testament to how far women's football has come in this country. And I think we sort of too easily say that sometimes. But when you compare it to last year's FA Cup final, which was a great event for both sides, City and West Ham, this year it just had something a little bit special about it, didn't it?
Do you know what was great is that it didn't feel like Everton were huge underdogs going in. I think City were always going to be favourites because of their experience and their success in cup finals. But it was kind of built up as being this big final that should have been a great match. And it really was. It's quite funny. I checked into the hotel at Wembley the night before and I got talking to the guy behind reception. He was like, so what kind of standard is women's football at these days? What sort of League One, something like that? And I was like, just watch it. And I'm so pleased. I was like, it's up there. Just watch it. And that final really didn't disappoint. I'll say one thing about pitch shot. It's great because I'm literally sat behind, you know, Demi Stokes was taking throw-ins right in front of me, a couple of metres in front of me, which is great. But because you are the same height as the pitch, you don't always get a great idea for the game as a whole. It's often easier being higher up. But yeah, a couple of metres away from the players, and what an experience. I covered the Community Shield earlier this year and had to do it stood outside Wembley. And let me tell you, it's not the same being stood on Wembley Way with no fans as it is actually being able to watch football right in front of your eyes.
I also find that when you've got thousands and thousands of fans and you're doing your job, you sort of get that white noise effect. But when there's just a few people and playing staff there, it's a little bit strange because you feel like you're being watched more. Whereas when there's thousands and thousands, you just sort of get on with it. I don't know whether you found that. I did want to bring in as well the fact that you'd not thought through this fashion purchase of yours, because social distancing was in operation, which meant that your new coat, it didn't even get a sleeve in shot.
Devastating. I'm so glad you brought up the new coat. Every women's FA Cup final, I like to buy a new outfit. Normally it's in May, so it's normally a dress because it's a lot warmer. But yeah, went for a new coat. Not going to lie, wasn't cheap. And nobody saw it because normally when you do pitch side, you might be stood next to the player, so you're on screen. Or at the very least, as you say, your sleeve might creep into shot. In this case, because microphones are placed on stands and you're 2 metres away from players, a complete and utter waste of money, I'm pleased to say.
Oh, well, you can wear it again. Maybe you can let us know why this new coat was so special, Joe. Seeing as no one saw it, I, you know, presume it had something exotic to offer, did it?
I fear I may have bigged this coat up a little bit too much. It's a little bit of a Del Boy coat. To be fair, I did creep into the 10 o'clock news for 10 seconds that night. So, you know, if you're desperate to see it, go back and watch the 10 o'clock news on Saturday. But it's probably not worth it.
Well, we're going to go through all the finite detail of that Women's FA Cup final in just a moment. We'll be talking about the forthcoming weekend in the WSL as well as we get back to domestic league action. I did want to say, actually, if you're listening and you've not yet checked out Natasha Dowie in the WSL edition, it was a special that Lindsay did with Jen O'Neill from She Kicks and Natasha Dowie. She's playing for AC Milan at the moment. But my goodness me, I really enjoyed this one, Lynn. So big up to you guys as well. I thought it was a terrific interview.
She spoke so well.
She was so measured. I mean, she's been talking about, you know, wanting a broadcast career possibly after she retires, although she's got no intention of doing that yet. And I just thought, my goodness, she speaks so well. She was so honest, particularly what she had to say about Hope Powell and also about Liverpool as well. I thought that was really interesting. It was just it's a really enlightening interview. Yeah, please do check it out. It's a WSL edition. It's up on all the usual places. I'm sure you've listened to it as well, Joe.
I loved the Tash Dow interview. My favourite bit was when she talked about the 2015 World Cup and the fact that Mark Sampson phoned her up in the run-up to it. She'd been in the English squad heading into that World Cup, and he basically said to her, you're kind of in contention, but if I take you, you're going to be pretty much a squad player. You're not going to play much. Where does that fit with you? And she basically went, nah, you're all right, mate. Thanks. If I'm not going to go, if you're not even going to tell me I'm going to play, if I don't have a chance of playing, I'll sit this one out. So I thought that was quite a brave thing to talk about.
And there's been loads of positive feedback, hasn't there, Lynn?
Yes, we've had lots of different messages from around the world because, of course, she's been that journey woman, hasn't she, in football? So the messages coming in from Australia, Sweden, all different sorts of places where she's picked up fans. But yeah, if you haven't listened yet, I would urge you to because she is just so fantastic in it. But I think we should get on with this week's show now. So there's only one place for us to start. And of course, it's FA Cup final.
You're listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Park, rolling inside, right-footed player, good ball, Stanway's in there to win it! Manchester City 2, Everton 1! Off the bench to score! And Everton hearts are broken! Stanway brings in Becky, this to finish it, this to settle the cup, that settles the cup, it's Manchester City's cup again!
Yes, Manchester City are the 2020 FA Cup winners in November. I know, hard to get your head around that part. But they beat Everton after extra time behind closed doors at Wembley 3-1, the final score. City opened their account through American World Cup winner Sam Mewis in the first half before Everton equalised with a Valerie Govan header in the second. Not that she seemed to know a huge amount about it.
Well, extra time followed, but City were too strong for Everton. Goals from super sub Georgia Stanway and right at the death, Janine Becky made sure of the win. It's City's third FA Cup in 4 years and a first trophy for manager Gareth Taylor.
Well, it was a really entertaining final, as we've already touched on. Joe, do you think it's the best one for quite a long time?
For me, I think it's probably up there, the best one since actually maybe 2010, which is when Everton won it in extra time against Arsenal. Mm. The first half may be a little bit dry. I did worry about Everton conceding so close to half time. But the second half, what a game of football. We had woodwork, the ball hitting, you know, the post. We had amazing saves from both goalkeepers. We had injuries. We had goals. It had a bit of everything, actually.
What was the difference between the two sides, do you think, Joe? What ultimately won it?
I think come extra time, Everton's players just look battered. And I mean that in terms of the injuries they were picking up were really racking up. We saw Valerie Govan pick up a nasty looking injury just before the break, actually. And I wasn't expecting her to come back out and play in the second half. But testament to her and the character of her to come back out. You could see she wasn't moving properly.
Yeah.
Still managed to come back out and score the equaliser and play on a bit after that. Hayley Rasso was limping quite heavily towards the end of the game. Dan Turner's ankle was strapped up with tape on the outside of her boot. They just seemed to be picking up knocks all over the park in probably, you know, some of their biggest players. City just had that little bit more freshness come extra time.
So I was going to mention this because I thought certainly when we got to the extra time part, probably within the second half of the first part of extra time, actually, I thought we started to see both sides flagging in terms of energy levels. I think we saw at one point Steph going down and having a bit of treatment for cramp. She looked like she might have a bit of cramp in her leg. So it was both sides. It wasn't just Everton, although I did think Everton looked tired. Then I think what you could see here is that Manchester City, that strength in depth, that is when you saw the difference, I think, between the two sides and yeah. their benches.
It was the substitutions, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Georgia Stanway, Janine Becky, you know, they obviously had a huge, huge impact when they came on. Jess Park, who we're going to talk about. And I think it was that strength in depth that really had the overall say in this match. But I think it would be a disservice to say to City that they weren't on top. You know, they were creating more chances. They had more shots on target. I mean, Sandy McKeever was absolutely sensational, wasn't she? And I thought, a mention for the goalkeeping. I think one of the reasons that this cup final was so good is that the goalkeeping was so good.
Yeah.
I mean, even when Ellie Roebuck was called into action, she was great too. And the fact that their standards were so high, I think made it such a good watch because it had to be something really, really clinical, a great piece of attacking move or a bit of creativity that was going to unlock this game because they were so on form. And for me, McKeever, staying alert for that amount of time. You know, when she cleared that Steph Horton header. Wow.
Yeah, and then also the Chloe Kelly one as well in the first half. That was, I mean, how she moved so quickly across the goal to be able to get a hand to that one. So, yeah, I mean, both of those saves, spectacular. And, you know, also City had 28 shots, 11 on target. So you can get a little flavour of what she had to deal with. And internationally, you know, Joe, this is great news as well. You've got Ellie Roebuck, who didn't really put a foot wrong in that game either, particularly. And also Sandy McKeever as well, two such strong prospects there, I suppose, for the future of goalkeeping.
What a time to be a goalkeeper in and around the England setup, because ever since Phil Neville came in as England manager, he doesn't seem to have really settled on a number one. Obviously, Karen Bardsley ruled under Mark Sampson, but she's had injuries in the last few years. He gave an opportunity to Siobhan Chamberlain before she retired, and then Carly Telford's been mostly the number one for the last couple of years, but he has been giving opportunities to the likes of Ellie Roebuck, and he does seem to be looking for the, you know, you've got three tournaments coming up in the next 3 years. He's probably looking to the future of beyond Carly, who's the next one in line. And these two certainly did themselves complete justice, I think, on the weekend to really show what they can do. But I think that goalkeeping jersey in the next year or so is really up for grabs. So yeah, I think it's a great time to be a goalkeeper.
And Sandy McKeever became the first goalkeeper to win player of the match in an FA Cup final since Carly Telford for Leeds in 2008. So it's worth us mentioning that too.
Do you know what? It was quite tough because I interviewed Sandy McKeever pretty much straight on the full-time whistle. And bless her, she's there in front of me, clutching her bottle of champagne, which is obviously quite an odd thing to be awarded player of the match when you've just lost a cup final at Wembley.
Yeah.
But I think because she was wearing a pink goalkeeping shirt, it just made her eyes look more bloodshot because I think there had been a few tears on a full-time whistle.
Yeah, I saw her standing with the other players and she just looked like she was trying to hold it together. She looked absolutely gutted. She was having to sort of concentrate hard not to sort of break down a little bit as well. And you could really tell how upset she was. I mean, she must have been physically exhausted at that point as well. The amount of concentration she must have had to exert over those minutes, you know, not just regular time, extra time too. It's an awful lot to put a young keeper through. But look, she was brilliant. I thought she was absolutely brilliant. Should we track back a little bit and talk about Everton as well? Valerie Govan, such an important part of that side. And her head again. Now, I've noticed she loves the header. Two out of three of her WSL goals have been headers this season. There was another crucial one in the FA Cup quarterfinal that sent them through to the semis against Chelsea. And, you know, despite the fact that she wasn't obviously moving particularly easy, she was a huge force for them. I just wonder, the kind of beauty of Everton this season is no one expected from them. And so they've just gone out and really enjoyed playing and are playing well because of that. And I just wonder, I hate to say that the big occasion got to them, but I just wonder if there was a bit of expectation there from them. And that meant that they didn't play as bravely as we've seen them play in the league.
certainly first half they looked quieter than I'd hoped they'd be. It's quite interesting. Normally the teams would go to Wembley at least the day before and walk around the stadium on the pitch, get used to the changing rooms. It's silly things that, as Willie Kirk says, you find out where the loos are. But because of COVID, the teams couldn't visit the stadium beforehand. Now, Man City were obviously there a couple of months ago with the Community Shield. Most of their players have played there either with Man City previously or with England. For most of Everton's players, that could have been the first time they really saw Wembley Stadium. So yes, they didn't have the crowd to contend with and all that brings, but to not even get a chance to kind of get a feel for the place, I think might have had a small effect as well. But certainly second half, bearing in mind they went in a goal down, I thought they came out and were a lot more alert in the second half and really took it to City.
Did, yeah.
And I think City were a little taken aback actually in some of the second half.
Izzy Christiansen, great again with her corner for Govan's header as well. So let's not you know, play them down. I do wonder, I suppose, whether they should have maybe tried to play out on the wing a little bit more. City, you know, particularly because City's defence isn't rock solid this season. So I wonder if there was more to be exploited from the wing, particularly from Nicolene Sorensen.
Well, yeah, I think there was. I think when Sorensen got on the ball, she was a threat every time. I don't know whether you would agree, Jo.
I mean, just on City's defence, I'll just touch on this. I thought it was a really big decision from Gareth Taylor to drop Gemma Bonner, who, her and Steph, I think, have looked fairly solid in the central defence this season, and bring in Alex Greenwood, a left-back, into centre-back. Now, yes, he's probably got the two best left-backs in the country and he wants to try and fit them both in. But for a cup final, I thought it was brave and it clearly paid off, didn't it?
Well, it certainly did in terms of Alex Greenwood's inclusion for that cross as well.
Yeah.
I think that was pinpoint, wasn't it? She put it on a postage stamp and she can do that. So her being in the side helped from that regard. But I agree with you that I think that Everton could have tested City's defence more than they did. And I did think that Sorensen was a great outlet for that. Yeah, I also wondered about subs. You know, Georgia Stanway, she came off the bench, didn't she, to replace Ellen White. She scored in last year's final two, a player for big occasions, she's proving.
She loves the big occasions. It doesn't matter if it's if it's a cup final at Wembley or a big England game. She is fearless. She's like a terrier. She never seems to get nervous. She just wants to get out there and get at people. And I think she will probably be a little disappointed, and maybe rightly so, to not start the final. She certainly came on and made the difference, didn't she? And I also want to touch on Jill Scott. It's a very odd feeling seeing her, you know, for a major cup final, sat in the stands. And you just have to question now where she goes from here at City. Because for me, Jill Scott, look, she's probably the most popular player in the game. But this isn't me just paying tribute to her because she's such a great person. For me, what she still offers this season is the same she offered last season, the season before that, and the season before that. You know, she's still got plenty in the tank. And for me to not see her get on the pitch, I thought was a real shame.
She's been in so many FA Cup finals, hasn't she? We were talking earlier about the game between Everton and Arsenal, where Everton won it in extra time. And Jill's got a part of that for Everton as well. You know, she's got so much history in this competition. And maybe, well, she's sort of taken up a coaching role at Manchester City Women, hasn't she? So we know that she's contributing in that way as well. But, you know, certainly her game time has to be managed these days.
I mean, yeah, she's also got some big years coming up with Team GB in England, and she might be thinking, if she's not playing at club level, how does that affect her potential selection? I'm not saying she'd get to all three tournaments, but I think she'd hope to at least get to one of them.
Yeah.
So what she does next could be a big decision for her.
Just to finish off this chat, Jo, we had some strange goings on in the fact that the FA Cup final anyway was in November, and now we're going to be moving on to the League Cup and this year's FA Cup final. It's all a bit skew-if, isn't it? But Chloe Kelly, she obviously started the competition playing for Everton.
I love this.
Finished it.
I love this fact.
Playing for Manchester City. What did you make of her performance?
Outstanding. I think people questioned when she went from Everton to Man City how much game time she'd get. And she has proven herself right from the off this season. She looks dangerous. She looks fresh, whether it's putting crosses into the box or, you know, scoring goals. I think she's been great for City. And what a loss for Everton. I'm sure they would have fought hard to keep her. But yeah, it's a great story, isn't it? Now, my understanding is, had Everton won on Sunday, she would have picked up a winner's medal as well.
She was in a win-win situation.
She really
then.
Was. They didn't, yeah. But yeah, I think she was delighted to win it with City.
Quick word on the managers as well. Willie Kirk obviously gutted, but he'll be proud of the performance that his side put in. Gareth Taylor, it didn't take long for him to get his first silverware, did he? And he's now challenged the team, hasn't he, to try and create history. So I'm sure he feels that this is, you know, sending out a very strong endorsement as to his tenure at the club.
I mean, with both managers, you got two really classy, likeable guys. And you could, yeah, Willie Kirk was devastated after the game on Sunday. He knows how close his team came. When it comes to Gareth Taylor, so bearing in mind that they've already been to the Community Shield at Wembley and lost, I asked him in his post-match interview, you know, Manchester City women's fans, and Manchester City actually is a club, really. They are a club that have come to expect trophies. How relieved was he to have finally, I say finally, bit harsh, to have delivered his first piece of silverware? And he said, yeah, that's pretty much it. It's relief. So I think for him, it's almost like it's sort of he's got it off his back now. He's managed to deliver an FA Cup. Whatever happens this season, he has delivered something. But yeah, I'm sure because the start of the season for City for me has been a bit rocky. He'll be hoping that this maybe sets them onto a path of more smooth results, I guess, in the league.
I just thought his post-match comments were stronger than I thought they would be in terms of setting the ambition out. I just thought there was a little bit of fight in them, actually, a little bit of determined intention, if you see what I mean. He didn't say the girls played well and this is great and this is a great start for me. You know, he's challenged that Manchester City team to keep creating history, which I thought he's obviously setting a very high benchmark.
I mean, for me, the main thing with the Gareth, he's got an incredible squad. Let's not keep going into the details about, two US World Cup winners, but he does have, Lucy Bronze has come back to the squad. The squad he inherited from Nick Cushing was incredible anyway. So there is pressure, I think, on him and the team to deliver. For me, though, I'm still not 100% sure if he knows his best starting 11. I think he is still finding his feet in terms of who's who, what's what works. So it's all very well challenging the team, but I also think he is probably, because he's not managed before, still finding his feet a little bit as well.
Rose Lavelle didn't look too chuffed.
She just didn't have a very convincing game, did she? She was absolutely fine. But yeah, I thought it was right that she was substituted, and that proved to be a really good decision from him.
I mean, look, Sam Mewis has come in and probably been one of, if not the best performers in the league so far this year. The goal again on the weekend just proves that her power in the air, but what she can do with the ball at feet as well is impressive. Rose Lavelle, for me, was probably the best player at the World Cup last year. Big expectations of her coming into Manchester City. She came in with an injury, so she's had a slightly slower start. But for me, she's not quite found her feet, not quite got to the pace and maybe the physicality of the game in England. And, there are other players on the bench, like Jill Scott, like Georgia Stanway, who are proven in this league. So it's going to be interesting to see how he manages Rose Lavelle to get her to the standard we know she can play at.
Well, more from our guest Joe Curry in just a moment. But first, let's take you inside the City camp and hear from one of their rising stars who set up one of the goals in the FA Cup final, forward Jess Park. Jess, congratulations on the win. That must have been a very happy bus ride home for you lot.
Yeah, it definitely was. A long bus ride, but definitely a happy one.
What was the mood like amongst the players? I guess it's always good, isn't it, to get that first trophy away in the season, even if it's last season's FA Cups. It was all a bit topsy-turvy anyway, wasn't it? But it must be really nice to have something secured so early on in the season.
Yeah, for it to have been this early on and to have got the first trophy kind of possible is brilliant. Kind of just builds us into the season kind of thing. We were all just buzzing, really. That was kind of the mood around camp, to be fair.
Excellent. Let's look at the game now. And, it's being celebrated, rightly so, because it was a really good FA Cup final. It's always really nice, isn't it, for these showpiece events, even without the crowd there, for it to be just a really exciting game. Yourself coming on in the second half for Rose Lavelle. What was the instruction from Gareth Taylor to you when you came on?
Kind of just do what I do, make an impact, try get on the ball as much as possible and create opportunities, because we liven the mood. We were looking like we were going to score quite a few times, so just kind of build when I came on and try and influence the game as much as possible.
And trying to get past Sandy McKeever as well in the opposition's goal. She made some awesome saves, as did Ellie, but definitely Sandy was kept very busy.
Yeah, she was kept busy all game and she had a brilliant performance. So it was definitely quite hard to put one past her. I think we must have hit every post, but a goal was definitely coming.
It was. What's it like coming on as a sub in a game like that? How do you mentally prepare? Do you do anything to kind of mentally prepare? Because you're sort of coming into someone else's game to a certain extent, aren't you, when you come on as a sub?
I kind of just get myself in a head frame to go and do my thing. Like, it's my chance to, you know, help the team out, really. That's all I want to do, help the team out, try and get as many attacking opportunities as possible, try and, you know, influence the game positively. That's all I really think about when I'm coming on.
And your pass for Georgia Stanway as well to result in such an important goal.
Yeah. I seen the run and I thought, play this. It kind of dragged the keeper out a little bit. Good weight on the ball and she got the toe to get the goal. So, yeah.
And it was so crucial. You must have been absolutely buzzing afterwards. And it's just, you know, really nice, especially because you're only 19, to have played such an important part in such a big game for the side.
Yeah, it's definitely given me more confidence and grown my experience. So I'll definitely build from this.
Tell us about life at City then. How do you get on with your teammates? How does it work? Because you've got obviously loads of Lionesses there. You've got two World Cup winners there in Rose Lavelle and Sam Lewis as well. How do the team gel together? How is life at City?
It's a good vibe, actually. We all kind of get along. We have our little groups, obviously, like with the Lionesses and the younger ones and the older ones, but we all get on really well. We learn from them who are more experienced and they try and give us as much of their experience as possible to help us grow as players. So, yeah, it's a good vibe.
And when Sam and Rose came, were you a bit starstruck? I think I would be, but then I'm not as sort of chilled as you, but to have two World Cup winners arrive in your team must have been a pretty major thing.
Yeah, it was great to have them, you know, come into the team. It's another challenge from a different area, so it's definitely brilliant to have them as team players on our team to help us as well. So
yeah, how do you adjust your head around, obviously the competition for places is fierce at City, you're young still and your game's still developing, how do you keep your head in check when there's that amount of competition there, and obviously you are so keen to get as many minutes as you can, so you have to be patient, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, you do have to be patient, but it's all a progress, isn't it? So, like, you're just working your way, you're learning from them players around you, like, You get great things because there's so many different players in the team. You can learn different things from each of them, and with the experience around, it's just being patient and learning from it, and it really helps.
Have you been working with a particular teammate or teammates in particular when it comes to helping you develop your game?
Definitely, like Chloe Kelly from like my position type thing. Lauren Hemp, obviously. Obviously, she's injured right now, but just learning from their positioning. Because obviously they're a bit more experienced than me, but still kind of young. So I've come through like I have.
And you've been at the club for must be about 2.5 years by now. Came through from York City. I know you grew up near Hull. So you've been part of that setup for a little while, but still a really brave decision from you to move to a completely different setup, completely different club at such a young age, really.
Yeah, it was definitely a big move, but it was one that I never questioned. It was kind of, I always wanted to be here. I love the place. I have a few family members here and there around here. It was definitely the way I wanted to go.
Do you ever have to cope with nerves or anything? Are you a player that sort of gets nervous, or are you just always raring to go?
I'm always ready to go. I'm quite a chilled person. Like, I just want to do my thing when I go on. I'd only say if I was starting, I'd probably get nervous like at the kickoff, but then it goes straight away as soon as we're in the game. So I don't really get nervous.
Talk to me about these backflip celebrations.
I can do a backflip. I got told off a few times when I was growing up for doing it. So I'll keep that one in the locker.
For the next FA Cup final, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
And in terms of footballing heroes, you know, when I grew up, women's football was not such a big thing at all. And now you've got a whole host of heroes, not just female heroes on the pitch, but also male heroes as well. Have you got a few people who you really look up to?
Obviously, you've got, you know, Ronaldo, the classic. But I love, like, how he plays, like, and how he's so driven. I love that about him. Female, I think I play a bit like Frank Kirby, so I'd say I do kind of look up to her as well.
And what about England? You're part of the under-19 team. In 2018, you're part of the under-17 team that went to the Euros, and you were named in the team of the tournament, weren't you? The only English player to do so. What are your thoughts on your international ambitions?
So my ambition is to be a regular, like Lioness, of course. But I'll just, you know, work the process. Club at the minute, if as long as I'm performing here, then that'll sort itself out. But obviously it's my biggest ambition to play for England and play in a World Cup, hopefully, and even win it, potentially.
And tell us about your manager, Gareth Taylor. How's he different to Nick Cushing?
He's definitely very on it. He's very demanding of us constantly, but it's brilliant as well because it gets the best out of us.
He's sort of called on you to help try and create history. So after winning the FA Cup, he had that soundbite at the end of the game where he's just basically saying that he's, you know, asked you to keep kind of creating history, I suppose, which is definitely a great expectation for him to level at you all.
Yeah, definitely. It just brings the best out in us, really, and makes us just as like wanting it as much as he does.
And next up, you've got Conti Cup against Liverpool. So you're heading to Liverpool for that one. And then you've got Bristol City at home in the FAWSL. How are you going to sort of work? Because that must be three games within 7 days. How do you get your head around that as a team? And are we going to see you again in the next couple of games, do you think?
Well, I hope so. We'll see. There's definitely areas for minutes potentially. So we'll see. I'll just keep working hard in training, and obviously the team he puts out will believe in it, and that'll be the team, and we'll all support that. So we'll see if I get minutes. But the most important thing right now is the recovery and getting the recovery spot on so that we're ready and raring to go again.
Yeah, because you're going to have to build in a little bit of rest time. You've you know, played 120 minutes, that massive high of winning, the long journey back, and now a couple more games to think about as well.
Yeah, it's definitely important to get on the recovery pumps and get in the ice baths, I'll tell you that.
Rather you than me at this time of year.
Yeah, but definitely we need to focus on the recovery, getting back ready to go again.
And where's all this going to get to? What are your main ambitions if we talk about the next 5 years? Have you got them mapped out? Are you that sort of person to say, right, I've got this on my wall and I'm going to try and achieve this?
I don't have no complete set. I've got, obviously, I just want to try and get into the England squad at some point and try and become more regular in the Man City squad. But other than that, I'm just working hard day in, day out.
Well, look, congratulations. A great FA Cup final. You played your part in it as well, which for a 19-year-old coming on as a sub was amazing. Amazing composure to spot that ball, make that pass as well. So you should definitely be giving yourself a large pat on the back for that. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
The heating's on. It's getting darker earlier and earlier, so why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week. For only 100 of your English pence every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/offside.
Manchester City's Jess Part there talking to me. And Jo Curry's such an exciting talent. She's one of those young players that could really take her career anywhere, I suppose, and some good homegrown talent as well.
I mean, she's not just broken into the first team at Manchester City this year in a squad of international players. She's really kind of taking it up and running with it. And she's so exciting. She reminds me of Georgia Stanway, that young... bravery. There's no nervousness there. If there is, she certainly hides it well. She just wants to get out and play, and she gets at players, she gets in their face, she's quick, she's strong, and if she keeps this up, she's got a big future ahead of her.
How does City get the best out of her with the setup that they've got?
So I was reading an interview with her this morning, and it quoted that apparently Ellie Roebuck and Georgia Stanway just said to her, trust the process. They came through the same pathway at Manchester City, and it's clearly done them wonders because they now play for England. And I think City are very good at developing youngsters, but also knowing when they're ready to play. So I think it's a case of keep giving her minutes. I mean, she started the game against Chelsea in the league what a way for Gareth Taylor to really say to her, I've got belief in you.
Yeah.
And it's paying off. And I think that's probably it. Not giving her too much too soon. She's 19 years old. Only she's still a teenager. She's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Look, he could keep everyone happy anyway. In his post-match comments, which I believe were to you, Joe, actually, he said that he wants to use this as a springboard for City, and he's challenging the girls now to make history and win the cup twice in one season. They would go down in the history books if they did that. He could also then give time to Jill Scott and all the other players as well that maybe didn't feel that they got enough minutes. A whole sort of different-looking City could win the next cup, couldn't they?
They could probably, from that squad, put two teams into the FA Cup and probably get both teams through to the latter stages. bearing in mind, you know, they've also got Champions League this season, and you know, England as a country is so desperate to see an English team get to a European final, finally win the Champions League that he is going to need the players like Jill Scott to be in all these competitions. So he's got a big squad.
League Cup as well.
League Cup, yeah. FA Cup, League. Yeah. You know, they have the capacity to win five trophies this year. It could have been six had they won the Community Shield, but five, you know, that'd go down all right, wouldn't it?
I don't think it's five anymore, Joe. Come on. We can't include WSL in that, can we?
Ooh, ouch.
I'm speaking honestly. They're fifth in the table. They've drawn against Brighton and Reading.
However, it's definitely not too late to take confidence from this FA Cup win and drive themselves forward, is it? No. You know, of course, it depends on the other teams around them, but you can't ignore City's strength and depth, which was the real showpiece. That's what won them the FA Cup final, you know, the depth that they've got on the bench. And he needs to utilise that for the whole season.
I think it goes to show that they could be the real danger when it comes to cup competition, because they've got enough quality that for a one-off sort of cup final, I wouldn't really want to bet against them, because they've got that talent to produce it for that 90 minutes, or if it's a 120, whatever it ends up being. But I think over the course of a WSL season where you need consistency and to be at that top for the whole of the league campaign, I don't think they're quite there yet. And I think they even acknowledge that themselves. I mean, Lucy Bronze referred to it there being a bigger project at City and that they're sort of just underway, being delighted, obviously, with getting a trophy. But I think they know that Gareth Taylor's new season is going to need a little bit of time. And that's what I infer from that. So cup competitions, right up there, I think in the league this season, they've got to just now focus on trying to get one of those European spots, surely.
You are calling it, aren't you? Okay, well, we'll wrap that up there. And Lindsay, you've been watching quite a bit of quiz TV recently, haven't you?
Oh, I love a quiz. Let's talk about that next. So, ladies, I must admit, Pointless up there is one of my favourites. And you might have even seen this, and if so, then you're going to find this very easy, Joe. Kate, I know that you won't have been watching. For some reason, I know this. I know.
Yes. Yeah, I was actually going to get you to explain to our listeners what the point of Pointless is.
Oh, come on.
People doesn't know how it works.
People well, no, know.
Not everyone's watched it. I had to look it up, Lindsay.
Are you kidding me?
I had to
me?
Look it up. I don't watch Pointless.
Okay, so the general gist is you've got to try and find the most unusual answer. You don't go for the most popular, you go for the most unusual. Okay. That's all you
and
need to know.
And that scores you the most points.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And when you get to the final round, the jackpot round, the only thing that will win you, usually quite a low sum of money, is a pointless answer. So nobody will have thought of this answer. But it was all centred around the World Cup in 2019. And this was the question. So I'm going to give it to both of you. Name any of the 23 members of England's 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup squad. And you've got to go for the pointless answer.
Nice.
So it's the most unusual, okay? So you get a couple of goes each.
I will go. I'm going to go first because then it's easier. I'm going to go for Lucy Staniforth.
Oh, so that's a really, really good call. But she actually did score very, very low, but she scored.
Okay, I'm going to go for Demi Stokes.
You've scored a point again. Oh. You're so close. So, so close. There are only three pointless answers.
Mary Earps?
Yes!
Yes!
Give her the music!
How much do I win? How much am I walking away with?
I think you probably would have won £1,000.
I'll take that.
That's usually what happens.
What I can't understand is the high scoring players. Jill Scott was worth 6 points. Now, I think a lot of people know Jill Scott. Millie Bright, 4 points. So many people know about Millie Bright because she's very, very well known against the Chelsea fans, for sure. So I would question some of those, but there we go.
We don't need a steward's inquiry. It's just a little fun game of pointless.
Get over it, Kate. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Conti Cup next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So FA Cup 2020 has been done, and that means that attention very quickly switches to the League Cup this week. So as we record this, Chelsea against Spurs is on Tuesday, Man City away at Liverpool, Everton have got a tough one, haven't they? Host Man United. There's no time to celebrate or commiserate for any of the FA Cup finalists. It's just too busy. In terms of scheduling, I guess there was no avoiding this, Joe.
No, I mean, this is the thing. It's wonderful that the FA Cup final finally got played, but the fact that it's been, the competition's been pushed that much further back into the year, it means there are going to be, not clashes as such, but there are going to be these weeks with three games in the space of 6-7 days. But look, we just want professional sport to be played. So the players would much rather be doing lots of games in 1 week than having to have, you know, months on the sidelines. So I think it's just great it's going ahead.
Yeah, plenty of games on. We've mentioned the highlights there. And, you know, let's not forget, it's great to see Chelsea up against Spurs, another London derby. Everton hosting Manchester United, you're right, will be a really interesting one, actually. I wonder how fatigued they will be after the FA Cup final on Sunday.
Yeah, I worry, you know. I think they're going to have a hard week because we will go on to talk about WSL fixtures this weekend. They have a really tough WSL fixture too. Yeah. I think this week is going to really take it out
with
them.
Yeah, I think it'll be tough. Man City away at Liverpool, no problem there, really, for me. I think we've already seen Gareth Taylor's strength and depth, and I'm sure he'll be using that fully in that fixture. Should we talk ahead then to the WSL fixtures this weekend and do a bit of a decent preview ahead of these? Joe, let's start with Manchester City again. They're hosting bottom club Bristol City this Saturday. Also on that day, Spurs face Reading, and Sheehan must not be named. I'm not sure that we're going to see her, are we? I think our expectations have been dampened.
She's come for a little bit of a getaway from coronavirus in the States, then realised it's back here. I don't know what's going on. Sell some shirts.
Can I just say as well, thank goodness that the WSL and other elite sport continues. I know it's not the same for all sport, particularly not amateur, but it's just nice to be talking about lockdown and the football still continuing, I suppose. That's a really important point.
Absolutely. And look, you know, these are two interesting fixtures. I think Spurs Reading will be quite a tight one. Spurs have been on the end of some biggish losses this season, but we've also seen them perform well. So I think for them, they need to really start putting some results on the board. Manchester yeah. City, Bristol, I really feel for Bristol and Tanya Oxtoby. You know, it's a difficult league to be in. Her budget must be dwarfed by the size of the bigger clubs. And on top of that, she's had so many injuries as well. And this will be one of the toughest fixtures, you know, away. It's Man City. They've just won the cup. A lot of travelling involved. So yeah, we don't like to see big scorelines in the WSL. So I hope for their sake that they come out fighting.
Should we move on to Sunday? One of the fixtures of the day, really. And there are some tasty ones this weekend, as we've discussed so far. But Everton are at fourth place Chelsea. Chelsea have got a game in hand.
I think Chelsea will win this quite comfortably now. I think after playing in the League Cup, and they don't really have many options, do they, Everton, for rotation? It's not as much as what Chelsea have. I think Chelsea will be very fresh coming into this. I suppose there is a word of caution because they haven't got one of their form players. You know, Frank Kirby now out for weeks, according to manager Emma Hayes. She's got an ankle injury that she sustained whilst training for England. But I think they've got enough other options, haven't they? Yeah.
I don't worry about Chelsea at all. Yeah. Everton dropped points, didn't they, last time round in the league with that draw against Brighton, Joe?
They did, but they also knocked Chelsea out of the FA Cup. So again, for me, I think it will depend on how fit the squad are after the FA Cup final. Again, we talked about the fact that some of their players look like they picked up some knocks at the weekend. And mentality-wise, you know, how tired are they? How quickly can they bounce back from that disappointment? And how quickly can Willie Kirk pick them up and go again? But tell you what, come midday on Sunday, don't bother calling me because my phone will be off because Chelsea, Everton, Man United, Arsenal, what a weekend. I hope it's raining and I really can just stay inside quite happily and watch football all day.
Yeah, and Man United, Arsenal, you just mentioned. Wow. I mean, third against first, we've got league leaders Arsenal who've shown that they are going to be the ones to catch this season. But if anyone's going to cause an upset, you would think that Man United have it in their locker.
Well, I asked Willie Kirk before the FA Cup final, if you win this trophy, is it proof that Everton have arrived and we finally have a top four? And he went, you know what, we've already got a top five. And he included himself, he included Everton in that.
He included himself.
Yes, it's Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea and Willie Kirk. He included Everton in there and Manchester United. So, you know, United are already very much being seen as being up there. They do need to get the results against the other so-called top three, top four. But I tell you what, come the end of the season, I don't know if they'll be in there for the title. I think it'll be tight, but I think they'll certainly be in there for a Champions League spot there or thereabouts.
Yeah, contenders. Next one up, Birmingham versus West Ham. West Ham on 1 point, they've lost every single game since that draw in their season opening. Birmingham, of course, been doing really, really well. It's sort of really hard, this fixture, for me as a neutral, because I love what Birmingham have been doing. I think Carlo Ward's been doing a great job. Equally, I'm really concerned for West Ham. Where are you on this, Joe? I know you spoke to the girls about it the last time that you were on, but they're still in the same situation. And we are, what, 5 games in? They've played all 5, haven't they? So, what do you do with West Ham?
It's a very good question. Firstly, I'll say kudos to Birmingham. I think they are doing incredibly. We've talked a lot on this podcast about, you know, the fact there wasn't even a squad for Carla to come in and manage, and she's managed to build a squad and have really got them going. West Ham, they are a worry. You know, they've not just lost games; they've been on the end of some big defeats. They have the players in that squad to not just be safe this season, but certainly be, you know, targeting mid-table at the very minimum. And Matt Beard is a manager of incredible experience. He's been at both ends of the table. He's managed abroad. Something is not clicking right now. I'm not worried about them long term, but they do need to start putting points on the board. It really is that simple. 1 point from 5 games, minus 13 goal difference. It's not what you'd expect from them, because they, you know, it's a club that's well invested in.
Yeah, and they're not going to, despite how much they like Matt Beard and how much they have supported him in the past, when you're the owner of a club or when you're the director of a women's side and you look at what's happening there, you can't have infinite patience. And I really like Matt Beard. I think he's good at what he does. But it gets to the point where 5 games in, you're on a point, you're near the bottom of the table, and you have to start thinking about at least putting some plan in place.
Look, this will be hurting Matt personally. He lives for football. And he knows that his team aren't performing the way they should be and could be. And he'll be well aware of, you know, people will start talking about his future if things don't improve quickly. But you're right, we're asking clubs, Premier League clubs, to invest millions in their women's team. They're not going to do that if the teams aren't performing.
It's a great opportunity for West Ham, though. The timing of this fixture has, unfortunately for Birmingham, come very well for them, because Carla Ward, she's been doing a great job, but she had COVID and has had to self-isolate. She won't have been as hands-on. The preparation for this match will have suffered. And I think he could have been in a much worse predicament coming into this fixture with a fully fit Birmingham, high on confidence, with her at the helm, able to prepare as she wanted. She will have had to have adjusted. And I wonder whether that's opened marginally a door here for West Ham to get something from this fixture.
Potentially. I would say with both teams, though, they're not. It's not like a Manchester City, Chelsea, Arsenal. It's not ram-packed with internationals. Yes, both teams have international players, but it should mean that a lot of the players have been out on the training pitch in the last week or two. So both managers, depending obviously on how Carla's return to football after the COVID result has been managed, should have had time with their players on the pitch. And I think certainly in Beardy's case, it's probably time that he's cherished and very much needed.
Finally, Brighton versus Villa. Of course, Villa are back in action. They haven't played for a month, have they, due to an outbreak of COVID within their setup. What kind of Villa are we going to get back?
It's a Villa that needs to start proving itself, if I'm honest. I mean, yeah, they've only played three games, so they're in a slightly false position, but no points in three games. It is something to look at. You know, again, it's a club that's invested, and they will expect Aston Villa, certainly with that squad, you know, they've recruited well to be able to stay up this season. It's a big old job for Gemma Davis, the manager. But yeah, it's a good game to go out this one against Brighton. Brighton have actually been playing well this season. You know, they very much deserve their spot mid-table, and they will be looking upwards. But it's certainly one of the games that Villa, I think, would look at this season and go, we can get a points from this one.
Joe, your tip for the league title this season?
Oh, really? This early?
I'm going to go. Yeah, let's pin it to the mast.
Lindsay Hooper from ruling Manchester City out, has it?
I am going to go at this point Chelsea. Arsenal's long-term injuries are beginning to rack up once again. And I think because there's so much football to be played, that until they start getting those big name players back, I think could, it's not a big squad. We know that. We know Joe likes to work with a small squad. I think that will start to affect them as it has done in previous seasons. Whereas Chelsea, you know, you look at their bench and it's terrifying. And Emma, she's got the experience of league titles. I just think for me that they will come good.
Well, we'll round it up just there and see who's right at the end. I'm going to just back out of this one completely. And trot on towards the end of the podcast. Joe Curry, thank you very much for joining us. What's next on the agenda for you?
So over the start of December, we have hopefully an England game against Norway. Fingers crossed that one goes ahead after obviously the game against Germany last week was called off. At the BBC, we've got a big week coming up in the next couple of weeks, Women in Football Week, where we'll be looking at various different women in football. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. That's going to be a good week, actually.
Exciting stuff.
We urge everyone as well to check out offsiderulepodcast.com. We do have regular women's content going up there. Rich Laverty has a column, but we have other writers now submitting quite a lot of articles across the women's game, don't we, Kate?
Yes, we do. We have our young mentors who are contributing both men's and women's content as well. Jessie Parker Humphreys too, contributing regularly on the women's game. There's always plenty there to check out. And don't forget, if you haven't listened to the WSL edition with Natasha Dowie, Lindsay and Jen O'Neill from She Kicks, please do that. It's a great episode. It's a great one to go out for a walk to, is what I would say, which is when I listen to it. Genuinely very, very interesting stuff there. Joe, thank you from us for getting on board. We're back again next week, aren't we, Linz?
We are. I will end the episode, as I do every week, by asking people to leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It does help other people find us. And with the WSL edition, that is particularly important. We hope the coat gets an airing, Joe.
It will be seen Norway. At some point. Even if it's in summer next year, I'm going to keep it on until someone gives me a compliment somewhere and I get it on screen. Sad, isn't it?
Oh, the beauty of social media nowadays is you can just put it on there if it gets too desperate.
I mean, by all means, go to Instagram and, you know, leave a nice comment.
Thank you very much. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at offsiderulepodcast.com. And by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule WSL edition is a Muddy Knees Media production.
Muddy Knees Media.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.